Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. This week, I am pleased to welcome to the show Dr. Jeff Sherman. Jeff is the Chief Medical Officer at Horizon Therapeutics. Jeff, I'm very, very pleased to have you on the show. Welcome. If you could perhaps give us a quick overview as to I guess what Horizon Therapeutics is all about, I guess, just to get us kicked off.
Sure. Thanks again, James, for the invitation to join the podcast. You know, my background, physician trained in internal medicine, infectious diseases, research work in allergy, immunology, focused on mediators of inflammation. You know, Horizon Therapeutics is a biopharmaceutical company focused on treating rare diseases in the inflammatory autoimmune areas.
Yeah. Okay. And look, as I ask literally all of my guests that I have on the show, to take you back a bit, perhaps, I guess, first question is, how did you get into this space? How did you get into the world of clinical research, Jeff?
So when I was at the University of California, San Francisco, doing fellowship training there, a number of faculty members were involved with biotech pharmaceutical companies and viewed that I could have a greater impact in developing new medicines than, let's say, either treating one patient at a time, doing basic science research work, or involved in clinical studies from an academic perspective. So then had an opportunity to join what was then SWIB, in a translational medicine capacity. That transitioned into Bristol-Myers Squibb, went to Ossuro, which became part of Pharmacia, now Pfizer, Takeda, and a number of smaller biotech companies. And Ossuro had met our CEO here at Horizon, Tim Walbert, and we've worked together across a number of companies. And really a big focus has been patients, particularly since Tim's been public about the fact that he has two autoimmune diseases.
Wow.
And you know, each year has to go through reauthorization of his medicine. So a big part of Horizon is truly patient-focused, because that patient could be any one of us and how would we want to be treated. And we really look at, you know, especially opportunities in the orphan or rare disease space. Over 7,000 rare diseases, only 5% of treatment. And these are, you know, really terrible diseases where patients would trade for our worst day. So James, no matter how hassled you may be or I am, you know, things that we may take for granted, such as activities of daily living, being able to get out of bed on your own, you know, brush your teeth, etc., is really an ordeal for these individuals.
Very interesting. Yeah, because I think there's things like that that we always think, oh, we've got to do this today, we've got to do that today. But I guess if you flip that a little bit and you speak to these individuals, it would be like, I get to do this today, or I get to do that today. You know, just talking about those very menial tasks to us, but could be, yeah, very much sought after for them, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And so we really look for, really do three things. One, what can we do to advance knowledge in a disease state we're involved in? What can we do as well to advance knowledge of our medicines so that patients, their families, caregivers, healthcare providers can have informed decisions of whether a medicine's right for them or not? Yeah. And then, you know, break down barriers to access, because it's really accessibility. And even when you look at our corporate, you know, logo, there's four vertical pillars that have special meaning. You know, first one is for patients, because at the end of the day, James, we're all patients, and how would we want to be treated? Next is really for our families, caregivers, who are really integral, you know, to support us through a disease state, the healthcare providers. And then the fourth is the communities in which we work and serve as well, because it's really important to, one, not only prepare the next generation of healthcare providers. So we're very much involved in, you know, STEM activities, science, technology, engineering, math, arts, just to really help increase, you know, the capabilities of our communities and really address health inequalities, disparities as well.
Very nice indeed. You're making me feel bad about my own company logo now, Jeff. Certainly there's not as much thought has gone into that. Is this part of kind of a rebranding or kind of a branding team that have put this together? Or was it like this from day one? I mean, when did the business start? And what were you involved from day one, Jeff?
Right. So with Tim Walbert, we came on to Horizon Therapeutics from another company. We were at a company based on the West Coast, commuting back and forth from Chicago. We were able to get a product approved in Europe for osteosarcoma bone cancer.
Wow.
Terrible childhood cancer. And this medicine, along with chemotherapy, prolongs the life of individuals. And then looking at what to do next, that company sold to Takeda Millennium. Ironically, where we're at now and where we're speaking from is actually a former Takeda facility in Deerfield, Illinois.
Wow.
So as we've grown, but what's remained from day one to your question, James, is really the focus on patients. So as we were evolving and as we've grown, you know, to really make sure each and every one of our employees, it really doesn't matter at what level, you know, we see every day, you know, why we're here. And that's helped to evolve the, you know, the logo and so to speak, branding of Horizon of really truly patients come first, because again, that individual could be any one of us.
Yeah. Well, look, I like that with the four pillars and what you stand for and everything else. I guess, you know, speaking of yourself and the early days with Tim and moving over from another company, I remember when you and I first connected, I was somewhat taken back by the humble beginnings. If you wouldn't mind kind of sharing a little bit about how things looked back then, that would be...
Well, you know, when we joined, and hopefully this will project, this was Horizon Therapeutics in Palo Alto, California.
Wow.
Some leak base, almost reminiscent of the Disney Pixar movie Up. So, you know, privately held company, just a couple of individuals, and focus on, you know, bringing medicines forward. And, you know, there's a number of what I would refer to as one and done biotechs, you know, companies with interesting technology, but, you know, the odds aren't great in terms of clinical development. It's, you know, been said 1 out of 5, 1 out of 10 products that enter in the clinic make it, which means 4 out of 5, 9 out of 10 don't. And if you're a small biotech, if there's a miss, you may not have any resources to fall back on.
Yeah.
So a lot of it for Horizon was, you know, getting a product quickly approved, going public, getting cash flow and moving more and more into rare diseases. So literally starting from almost a virtual company to where we're at now, a couple of thousand employees and a worldwide scope.
I was going to say, because when I look on LinkedIn, it's close to 3,000 employees now. And then you show that picture. So for anyone who's not watching the video version here, I guess head over to YouTube and check that out. It's pretty incredible. Because I can't imagine. So there was a handful of you guys at that point. Was the focus even then on the rare disease because of Tim's kind of openness about the autoimmune, or was it not so much? You talked about having to get something approved quickly. So just curious as to how life looked in those early days. You know, was it, I guess, what I typically picture with startup biotechs, you know, everyone's in the office 24/7, it's all hands on deck. Was it like that, or is that just me creating myths in my own mind?
Well, yeah, when we joined, you know, the product concept that was being worked on at, you know, at Horizon Therapeutics was a combination gastroprotective non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. So, you know, going time, so to speak, one of the breakthroughs, and Tim and I were involved with Celebrex, when we were at Searle, and they also had another product, a combination product as well, called Arthrotec, which Pfizer still markets. You know, the thought here was bringing a combination product forward. There were a couple of withdrawals of other COX-2 inhibitors and a real void in terms of a gastroprotective non-steroidal. What people don't realize is that each year, around 100,000 individuals get hospitalized for toxicity from a NSAID. So this could be brand name, think of aspirin, other congeners, 16,000 die, and you can develop gastric erosions and ulcers in a little less than a week.
Wow.
So not a real appreciation, a real void. There's three ways of getting a drug approved through the US FDA, new entity, generic, and something in between called a 505B2, where if a product's been, let's say, off patent, but not approved for a certain indication, it's a, you're able to reference those documents with the FDA and helps to fast track things along. So some of our initial products were addressing unmet needs in osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, getting that revenue stream so that we could really pursue development of medicines in more rare diseases. And rare diseases, typically less than 200,000 individuals from a prevalence perspective. Some of our medicines, we're actually talking in the thousands of patients. So very, very rare. Some of which, you know, individuals may or may not be aware of, but certainly devastating diseases in terms of morbidity and some life shortening as well.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds like, yeah, kind of there's always big plans there. I'd be interested to hear how the scaling went, Jeff. So from that kind of small office, how many staff were we looking at when, you know, I'm envisaging that? How many, you couldn't have got too many individuals in there. Do you remember kind of the handful of people that were in the office? And then how did it scale to, you know, what was the next step? Was it like 20 staff, 50 staff, 100 staff? How did it go in those increments?
Sure. I mean, initially it was literally a handful of individuals. It was getting a product approved, going public, using those funds to actually then start building a sales force. So literally going from a handful then to getting around 100 or so individual sales force, and then slowly building from there. I mean, a lot of it, and part of it, you know, why, let's say, Chicago, we had worked at companies in Chicago. There's a lot of, you know, skilled individuals here. You know, part of this whole horizon was, how do we de-risk this so we wouldn't be a one and done? How do we really build and bring on individuals, some of which, you know, we knew, so that was de-risked as well. Some of it was through, over the years, network and connections, as we would either develop products or acquire products, having an understanding of what may be, you know, undervalued, underutilized medicines. Why rare diseases? As I mentioned, over 7,000 rare diseases, only 5% of treatment. A lot of companies aren't in the rare disease area, and a real unmet need here. And so we saw an opportunity for a small company to be able to grow and compete.
Wow. And it seems like you certainly managed to do that. You know, that growth is pretty incredible. And then to get to where you are now, how did your role change along the way? Because I can imagine when there's just a handful of you, it's very easy to go and perhaps tap someone on the shoulder and say, hey, I need this, or this is what we're working on. But as you then brought on the sales team and built out those functions, and you went, you know, in excess of 100, 200 staff, how did your role change?
Yeah, to your point, I mean, at the beginning, you wind up wearing multiple hats. You know, even if it's, you know, custodial crew to clean out the garbage at night.
Yeah.
And then as you grow, you bring on, you know, more individuals with expertise. So you're able to start shedding a number of hats, so to speak.
Mm.
And a lot of the role has really been more now externally focused. You know, patients come first. We do a lot of work with patient groups. We do a lot of work with professional societies, certainly a lot of work with key experts in the various fields that we're involved in.
Mm.
So that means quite a bit of travel. And so if you're traveling around the road, you want to make sure you have individuals, quote, you know, at home or their various offices who are, you know, doing a lot of the day-to-day work as well. Because again, for us, there's a real sense of urgency because each day delayed may be, you know, someone who may need an unnecessary surgery that could have been avoided if they had been on medicine sooner than later.
Mm.
Or it could be that they may not recover from, you know, their illness that may be progressing.
Yeah.
So again, a key focus on what can we do because that person could be any one of us. So a real sense of urgency.
Sure. And you mentioned a second ago about, you know, this massive focus on the patients and also, you know, liaising with societies, communities, etc. And I always find that, you know, sometimes the more that you give out, the more that you get back. Are other biotechs doing the same as you? Or are you kind of in a league of your own on that front? It seems like you're doing so much there. And there is this big focus. And I see a lot of it, you know, people talking about patient focus. But I've not yet spoke to anyone who I think has really been driving this home to the level that you have. So are other people, in your opinion, doing it right? Or, you know, doing as much as what they could do?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, opine it certainly what some are doing or not. I think that what I can say is that it's been embedded in the company, you know, particularly when you have a CEO who's been public about the fact that he has two autoimmune diseases.
Yeah.
It took a while for him to get a diagnosis, to get on treatment. You know, one of those treatments, you know, he has to go through reauthorization each year.
Mm.
So it then transcends through the organization as well. And, you know, look, I think, you know, everyone's been touched, at least if not personally, but through family, colleagues, someone that they know.
Mm.
And so then it really becomes embedded, so to speak, in what we do on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, that may or may not be different than other companies.
Sure. I thought I'd lost you there for a second, Jeff, but you're still with me. You're still with me. I've got you on the video. Cool. Well, look, in terms of, I guess, how things have gone, clearly there has been this growth. You managed to get those, you know, hit those early milestones that you were looking to achieve. What do things look like at present? Because it seems like there's been a huge amount of growth, a huge amount of change. If you were to kind of try and paint a picture of how things look at present, you know, you talked about the, you know, the image of the house from Up, the Disney or Pixar movie. How do things look now in terms of offices? I know that there's close to 3,000 employees, but how is it all spread out on a global basis?
Well, you know, we focused initially on the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, FDA had a number of initiatives, whether it was orphan designation, fast track, breakthrough to move products forward.
Yeah.
And we're globalizing as a company. We have offices now in many locations worldwide. You know, in the past, we would partner, collaborate, license with other companies in areas around the world. And we're doing that now on our own.
Yeah.
So the goal here is, you know, address unmet needs globally and really address, you know, those orphan, you know, rare diseases where, let's say, treatments may or may not exist, or mm-hmm. if treatments do exist, there's shortcomings. So as I mentioned, you know, when you have over 7,000 rare diseases and only 5% of treatments, there's a lot of unmet need and a lot of room for growth
mm-hmm. as a company. Definitely. Definitely. Look, the other thing that's always on my mind, you know, hearing about this growth and companies that have been going for a while, is how you were impacted by COVID. I know for many, you know, it had, I guess, a positive impact on actual business and growth. How was it for yourselves at Horizon?
You know, we had already been working with individuals remotely, et cetera, and utilizing technology to keep connected. Mm. You know, there's also along the way some serendipity. So one of our products, we had a FDA action date, you know, March of 2020. FDA actually completed their review. We got the approval of that product in January, so we were able to launch pre-COVID, right. Which is very helpful. Mm. So there's some serendipity that occurs along the way as well. And then really had to, you know, mobilize individuals more remotely. You know, certainly you miss some of the personal interaction. But, you know, when there's patients in need, you do what you need to do to address, one, continuing to develop your medicines and making sure patients have access to your medicines, regardless of extenuating circumstances.
Mm. Okay. But yeah, so even with those external factors that were out of everyone's control, that focus remained, and it was a case of, look, we still got to get this done. Jeff, you've mentioned FDA approval several times throughout this conversation already. Now, for many of the, you know, the smaller biotechs and smaller business leaders I speak to, that is often the goal, the pinnacle of, you know, what they're trying to achieve. For yourself, it seems that you've been there, you've done it, which is incredible. What would you class as, you know, is there one, you know, biggest achievement or most notable to yourself personally that you recognize since starting out on this journey, either pre-Horizon or with Horizon?
You know, sentinel moments, my career, it's really bringing new medicines forward that address unmet need where there's nothing there before. And more recently for us, it's really been what's called thyroid eye disease, individuals, autoimmune disease that really cause eye muscles, fat behind the eye to increase and push the eye out.
Wow.
And then what happens is eyelid can't close, the cornea that protects the surface of your eye can dry out, ulcerate, many other complications. You can have misalignment of your eyes, double vision, etc. And we brought a medicine forward, first of its kind, and first to be FDA approved.
How does that feel, Jeff? I mean, because hearing you describe that, I mean, it was almost making me wince a little bit when you're kind of talking through some of the symptoms there. How does that feel for you to be like, I've, you know, or collectively, we have put together something that is going to cure this or treat this for patients?
Well, you know, as I said before, that person could be any one of us. Mm. And it really makes a difference in terms of how not only patients feel, function, getting their life back. I mean, you can imagine, you know, with the work that you do, if you had, you know, bulging eyes, misaligned eyes, individuals would be looking at you like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? Mm. You may or may not be able to even function, you know, visually. Some of our other medicines address other needs, you know, such as one for urea cycle disorders, which, you know, you're going, what is that? You know, we eat protein, no matter whether it's you're a vegetarian, vegan, carnivore, whatever. Mm. Proteins are broken down to ammonia, which can be toxic. We have enzymes in our liver, urea cycle, that'll detoxify that to what's called urea, which we urinate out.
Yeah.
There are individuals where these enzymes may not be functional. For them, a single meal could be catastrophic, especially if you're a newborn. Mm. So what we can do to give, you know, people, you know, their lives back and be able to function, you know, as near normal as possible is rather gratifying. Mm. Because again, that could be any one of us, family members, etc.
Incredible stuff, Jeff. Yeah, as I say, I can't imagine the feeling of, you know, putting these things together and knowing that that is what you're doing, I guess my next question perhaps alludes more to your own personal journey. You know, you're changing the lives of all of these individually and improving the lives of all of these patients outside of your own world. How do you think that you have changed? Have you changed? I mean, because some of it, you seemed like you almost, not nonplussed, but you seem to be taking it in your stride of, you know, this is what we set up to do. We're doing it and we will continue to do it. But how do you feel like you have perhaps changed personally since starting out, you know, out of college, out of grad school, et cetera?
You know, I think what it's done is, if anything, more of a, even a passion to what can we do more of?
Yeah.
You know, what can we do to really start to, you know, interest and cultivate a next generation to continue the work?
Mm. So it is more of the same. Just keep that going.
Absolutely. What can we do more of in terms of the communities in which we work and live?
Mm.
Because as you know, there's health disparities.
Yeah.
COVID, as you know, talked about earlier, you know, magnified a lot of disparities, et cetera. And so a lot of this is, what can we do personally and professionally to improve the world around us?
Amazing. And as a business, I'm assuming that the focus is going to be similar to that, but is there any plans to diversify at all into other therapeutics, or, you know, into new markets that you're not yet in, or are you planning to kind of double down on what you're already doing well?
Yeah, you know, again, when you look at rare diseases, inflammatory diseases, autoimmune diseases, a lot of which are rheumatologic, there's so much unmet need there.
Mm.
There's a lot to do just there alone before spreading out into other areas.
Sure. No, I'm more than okay with that. I'm a big believer in kind of doing what you do and doing it well, if, you know, certainly if there's more than enough work there. Well, look, Jeff, it's been fantastic hearing about your story and how the business has grown from those very, very humble beginnings to 3,000 approximately staff now and multiple offices, etc. Before I let you go, we normally close the show with a quick fire questions round. I'd love to get, you know, pick your brain on some of these. I'm sure our audience would love to hear your thoughts. So I'll kick off and just ask you, if there was one piece of advice that you could perhaps give to your younger self before embarking on this journey, what would that be?
Yeah, it would really be, you know, explore every and all opportunities, you know, and as well, get involved in the communities around you. You know, we've been involved in the rare disease areas I've mentioned. You know, we've worked in, you know, we've had, you know, setbacks in trials as well, but continue to support those communities.
Mm.
You know, one of which is the Friedreich's Ataxia Research Alliance, or FARA. Yeah, it's just important because, again, you know, you never know what, you know, these diseases are all equal opportunity employers, so to speak.
Sure.
And it's just really important, you know, there's a lot of rare diseases, but collectively we're talking, you know, 1 in 10 individuals. So you can look at them separately, rare, collectively. And yeah, a lot of this is working with different, you know, groups, open up doors in terms of other groups, other professional societies as well. So what I would say is, you know, to anyone, be open and, you know, never say never.
I like it. And look, for our audience, what would you recommend as perhaps the number one book or resource that either you've used or just in general?
Yeah, I have 5 grandchildren now, James. So a lot of what I read is Dr. Seuss.
Right.
You know, what one, you know, book or resource that they may want to, again, you always want to remember big beginnings, you know, everything, you know, I, you know, learned or whatever I learned in kindergarten.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's, but, you know, not to be trite. I mean, part of this is, yeah, treat others as you would like to be treated.
Sure.
You know, going back to never say never, you know, don't burn bridges. You know, it's literally a small world, and you know, you never know when you may be reconnecting with others in the future.
Indeed.
So you want to always keep your options open.
Agreed. Agreed. Well, I guess with that in mind and rolling on from that one, again, you guys have grown immensely. I'm sure you've surrounded yourself with good people along the way, but what are the top three qualities that you value most when putting together your teams, Jeff?
Yeah, look, it's really individuals who really share the same type of values, goals, you know, a real patient first, you know, type of philosophy, mm-hmm. you know, a sense of urgency, a sense of passion. And really, I think key for us is really looking at individuals who are more selfless than selfish.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what's in it for me. It's really what's in it for others. What can we do working together and better things for all of us, not just me personally.
Gotcha. No, I like that. I like that. And look, we've spoken so much about work, and I guess that is the focus of the show. But as you've mentioned a second ago, you've got 5 grandkids now. There is life outside of work. What do you do to let your hair down, to enjoy life outside of work when the grandchildren aren't running you ragged, of course?
Oh, no. I mean, they're most entertaining, and it helps to, you know, remind you of what's really important. Plus, you know, as a grandparent, you can spoil them rotten and go home at night and get good night's sleep. For those of you out there who are parents, you may be saying, you know, or as our daughters would say, well, you never let us do that. And I would just reply, what part of double standard don't you understand?
Love it. Absolutely love it.
But otherwise, you know, there's traveling and, you know, and some of it's with them as well. So we had a fun trip to Disney World most recently.
Nice. Very nice. I bet that kept you extremely busy as granddad or grandpa, whatever you get referred to as, to the grandchildren. Perfect. And look, finally, to close the show, Jeff, a bit of a deeper one, this one, but what is your number one golden rule for both life and business, if you were to try and wrap that up in one?
Yeah, again, it's what we talked about. You know, it's really treating people as you would want to be treated.
Awesome stuff.
And, you know, when it comes to things, you know, making sure you have the, you know, you have a same sense of urgency and wanting to get things done.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, Jeff. I guess for anyone wanting to learn more about Horizon, about rare diseases, about any of the communities and networks and societies that you support, what is the best way to learn more about Horizon and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, a lot of it's probably just from our website, mm-hmm. you know, horizontherapeutics.com. We're also involved in a number of other initiatives, one of which is Rare Is. So, you know, a lot of resources, a lot of things as well, you know, more than happy to, you know, engage and help one another.
Awesome stuff. We'll make sure that we get those tagged, those to accompany the show. So if anyone tuning in, check out the links below, you'll be able to grab those. But Jeff, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on.